Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau and Quality Time Broadcast.
One of my favorite moments ever.
In just life?
When, this is one of my favorite, if I were to rank all the moments in my life, which were the coolest things that ever happened, this is probably one of the best stories I have.
Crazy moments with Jerry.
We were having an intervention for my youngest sister, Amy,
okay,
who was going through some tough times.
Yes.
Okay, she's having a little mental breakdown, maybe was cutting herself, we won't get too much more into it than that.
Right.
So we're all there, and it's kind of like this heartfelt moment. We're all telling you, hey, we're really worried about you. Hey, this and that and blah, blah, blah. And we go from person to person. Mom goes, there's some tears, and Dad goes, there's not so many tears, but it's just kind of real. And, you know, I don't remember saying much of anything. And that was Jeremy's turn.
Oh, God.
And oh, Jeremy.
I remember this. I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Go ahead. Throw the mic up, Jer. Jeremy gets on, and he goes, Amy, you know, listen, if you're feeling like you're kind of crazy or whatever, you don't have to do anything like cut yourself or worry about suicide. Just do what I do. You take all of your emotions, you ball them up deep inside of you, and then every 10 years, you go batshit crazy. And then Jeremy looked at his watch like this, and he was just like, oh, time's up.
Oh, my God. How did she respond to that? Was she like, thank you?
We all started laughing hysterically, because this is the most ridiculous thing we'd ever seen.
Jesus God, Christ.
That's my brother.
10 years
is up.
Sometimes what you need is the last thing you want to fucking hear.
Oh, it's so great.
God, that's
so great.
Amazing.
Welcome to Quality Time, everybody. Woo! Yeah, yeah. Quality Time. The most quality in time you're going to have all day today.
If you typed in quality and then time in eBay, it wouldn't equal what we give you here.
Yeah, that eBay is fucking bullshit.
You can
it's
buy
run
all
by the
nice
man
clocks
anyway.
You want. You'll never get as much quality time as you get here, bitch.
Yeah, bitches.
I'm sorry I called you a bitch. I'm just excited.
No, it's cool. It's cool. We got a jam-packed episode, but that sultry voice that you hear just to the left of me is none other than Miss Kimberly Ambrose.
Hey. Hey.
How are you, Kimberly?
I'm good. I'm well. How are
you? Excellent. Excellent. You know, you were a little sick last week, but I'm glad you're really pulling through now.
Thank
feeling a lot
you.
Better. Great. And the man to my right, my blood, my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you?
Star of Cocoon. End of the Thing. I want to come back inside. Thank you. It's Wilford Brimley tonight.
Wilford Brimley, everybody.
And if you have some Quaker Oats, maybe if you have diabetes, I can help you out again. I will send you a special package in the mail that says, I have diabetes and I might lose a limb soon.
If you listen to older episodes, you would know that Jeremy and I got turned down by Wilford Brimley at Monster Mania.
Yeah. Fuck that clown ass.
He wouldn't let us record him.
And, you know, if you're not going to accept an interview from a hot chick that has a gun as a leg, F you as a celebrity.
Idiot.
So.
What an idiot.
He really did want to. He was just, it was the rules of the whatever. So.
Well, he like looked at his manager or whatever, and his manager was like, yeah, no, we can't, da da da. Like,
damn it, she's got a gun as a leg.
Be
I can't
a man.
Get an interview.
Be a man. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, you bitches.
Stupid.
I'm a fucking old bitch.
Stupid diabetes.
Give me some Quaker fucking suck my dicks.
Dia creepies, am I right?
Kim just gave me some information for some comedy gold, but I'm going to hold back.
Oh, okay.
Out of deference
all
to
right.
Kim. So let's just say the things that Wilford Brimley might say from the afterlife that I'm going to hold back. So.
Been holding this back for 67 years.
Oh, gosh.
Every dog?
You know, you could give me some of that. I can't give you food. You're dead. Damn it.
Yeah,
Stop it. Do you think Wilford Brimley just dies and gets to go to heaven where he gets to have a candy?
Oh, yeah. You know... you know, the one thing that you hate doing when you're in heaven is sharing catheters. I hate it. Everyone hates it. And so does Carl. Carl always is stealing my catheters, even though I fucking need them. Anyway, thank God God let me back in the house now, and I feel much better. Anyway, we had a jam-packed show tonight, but we're going over a couple of quick things. I'm headed off to the Middle East on Wednesday, whoa! Motherfuckers. Oh, my God.
What could happen?
So exciting.
I'm very excited. Me and Patrick Melton and Rob Mayer and Tommy Simbazo are headed over to, I think Djibouti is our first stop. We're going to North Africa for 3 days, and then heading up to Kuwait and the United Emirates and a couple other places on a 10-day comedy tour.
Whoa.
I'm pretty fucking stuck. North Africa.
It's just under your spine, you dumbass.
It's just north of Somalia.
You guys, I made a butt joke.
Somalia?
Yes.
Oh my god.
It's north of Somalia.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. I'm going to go to Djibouti.
Did you get all your shots?
I don't have to get any shots. I have to get malaria pills.
Oh, pills. Okay.
I have to get malaria pills. See, I thought it's just really funny because we're so lame that we're going on a comedy tour, and when they finally do our autobiography about, oh, we went on this wild tour, we were up all night chopping up malaria pills
just
and snorting them and playing Mario Kart on the Nintendo
Is
Switch.
It more effective if you rub malaria powder on your fucking gums?
Yes, exactly.
I have one question. Has Dan Naya pills in Djibouti?
I don't think so. He's done it out of a Djibouti. I think it's the first time we've mentioned Dan Ninen. You know, now we might be invoking the wrath.
Dan Ninen.
I don't want the wrath of Dan Ninen. He's very dangerous.
He's very powerful in the comedy world.
All I'll say is, come at me.
Oh, Jesus.
I will be hosting the second Saturday show.
Would you book Dan Ninen just for the novelty of having him on?
No, I love our audience, and I have to put on people,
Dan,
that our audience is going to love.
Dan, 100%, if you want to come to the Wits End, which is an open mic that pays nothing, that I book, please reach out to me and you will be on that show. I'll give you 20 minutes. I'll give you as much goddamn time as you need to come to the show.
There are two factions, much like the Twilight movies, and that's either the Rob Mayer or the Dan Ninen. So
yeah,
honestly, I have never seen Dan Ninen perform comedy.
Oh,
so if he's good, then
honestly,
fine, you can come on.
I will shit on just his psychoness that I've read about, right?
Yeah.
But his comedy, I mean, people shit on it because it's a little hacky. It's not bad. He actually gets good laughs. I'm not gonna. There's times where I'm sure he bombs with this material, but he does like very like. Here's a classic Dan Ninen joke.
Oh, okay.
I'm half Japanese and I'm half Indian, which means I get my sushi from 7-Eleven.
I will never shit on a comedian until I make a million, because I haven't made dollar one yet.
There you
Here's
go.
The thing about Autobar. If anybody's interested in being on the shit show, or if they've asked and they haven't gotten on or whatever, let me just explain something real quick. We've been doing this for 5 years. We know our audience. You may not be the type of comedy that our audience is going to like. It's not about us, and it's not about you. It's about the people that fill that room for free every month and buy beer and hang out and love the show. That's all it is. If you're good for the show, we will have you up. If you do the type of comedy that's maybe better at a comedy club, go make more money. Don't be insulted that we're not going to give you the tens of dollars that we got from donations from the audience.
I like the Autobar. It's very fun. And the second Saturday show
Thank you.
Phenomenal show. And
I can't
you guys
wait to
are
have
doing
you back up.
God's work up there.
Thank
God's
you.
Work. We have a fucking great show tonight, honestly. Guys, I watched it probably about a decade ago, and I watched it again yesterday and took notes, and it was the hardest movie to take notes of, to try to like structurally break down this film.
I have one note.
But it's so ridiculously funny, this movie.
Oh, God.
It is, at one time, it was the lowest scored movie on IMDb at 1%. It's up to 6% now.
Oh, wow.
As of now. Because it's one of those movies that if you tried to make a movie this bad, people would know.
Yes.
But somebody actually made this And everyone was just like, this is the director's vision. And we were talking, you know, right now the hot thing is the worst movie of all time is that people consider is The Room. You know, obviously they made an entire movie about it called The Disaster Artist, which is great. Just saw that yesterday. But this is before The Room. It is a precursor to it. And it is has very much some of the similar problems about how you make a really bad movie in the creation process. We are talking about the 1991 movie Troll 2, the sequel to Troll from last week.
It has nothing to do with Troll 1.
It, it doesn't even have a troll
now,
in it.
Can we talk about the trolls in the movie?
Which one? Not the none that exists?
That's right. It's right. Not trolls. It's goblins.
They're all goblins.
No troll.
Not one fucking troll
in
this
movie.
And
they're not even goblins.
All.
They're dudes in masks and potato sack clothes.
There's actually a really good documentary about this movie that I watched a while ago.
I bet it's better than the actual movie.
Honestly, it no, it's not.
Oh,
the movie I love. I will not take back in loving this movie because now that I've watched it, I think this is the third time I've seen it. I really love this movie. Like it's so you couldn't if you told. Honestly, if you told Ron Howard to make Troll 2, he couldn't do that.
Yeah.
He could not make this movie.
Yeah.
There's no way he'd able to do it. You could put the biggest actors in the world. Daniel Day-Lewis could not pull off the performance that store clerk owner has in the middle of this movie. He couldn't pull that off. There's no way he'd be able to.
Could I do my impression of some of the acting in this movie?
I have a lot of it queued up, so I don't want you to
step on it.
I have a lot of the audio queued up for later in the episode.
Nice.
So, all of the big lines are pretty much covered, but if I miss one, all right, give me one.
Okay. My dad doesn't like you. He says you hang out with your friends too much.
That's very accurate.
Thank you. I feel like it was bang on.
That's cut off your little balls.
And Jeremy ruined it. Okay. Now, this movie is directed by Claudio Fragrasso.
Wait a second, I thought it was Robert Drake.
That is his nickname, is Robert Drake.
You mean it's an Italian film?
Yeah. It's an Italian
guy. Hard to believe. I feel like a full-blooded American film to me.
Claudio Fragrasso and his wife, Rosella Drudi. They actually, when they were making the movie, they spoke no English. They only spoke Italian.
Jesus.
They wrote the screenplay. They wrote this entire screenplay in very poor English. And when the actor said, hey, why don't we ad-lib here and there? They put their foot down and were yelling at them in Italian, having translators say, no, read the fucking lines the way we wrote them. Do you understand? This is how it needs to be done. And the documentary is ridiculous about Troll 2. They talk about how most of the actors that showed up to that star in this movie actually just thought that they were trying out for like extras in the film, and they walked away with starring roles. Like they all...
Jesus Christ.
This is like the dad in the movie, who has probably one of the best lines in the whole film, was actually just a dentist. He was like, oh, it'd be cool to be in the movie. Probably be good for my business.
Oh, my God.
He ended up being the dad, one of the leads in the movie.
Pretty attractive dentist.
That he is.
Have you ever seen the movie Lost in Translation with Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson?
Some time ago.
I love that movie.
It's not very funny. Not a funny movie.
It's not a funny movie. It's directed by Francis Ford Coppola's daughter, Sofia Coppola. But there's a scene where he's in Japan and he's filming a commercial for whiskey. And they record, and then the director goes, Kato! And then he does this really long diatribe in Japanese. Like, it's really long. And he's, like, giving him direction. And he's doing this. And I'm not going to, like, do fake Japanese. But he's, like, telling him what to do. And it's, like, really, it's, like, a long time. And then the translator goes, speak more slowly and with a bravado.
Let me do it.
Like, that's all he said.
Can I do it as if Rosie O'Donnell was doing it?
Yeah.
I'm Rosie O'Donnell.
Blame it on Rosie.
Thank you. Thank you for that. the movie was filmed in Morgan, Utah. That's where Nilgob, the fictional Nilgob, exists.
Mm-hmm. Nilgob, that's a weird name.
Nilbog.
Yeah, that's a weird name. That's weird.
Yeah, that might come back later.
Strange.
I don't know
Claudio
why.
Actually in 2007 came to the town because they were having the Troll 2 festival there, and director Claudio was given the key to the city.
No.
The key to Nilbog. So
do you have any serious gravitas music for this?
Oh, I do. I have some gravitas music.
You bet your fucking ass. Do you have some gravitas music queued up and ready to go?
Well, the movie opens, and it's Grandpa Seth, who's telling a wonderful story to his son, or his grandson, and...
They picked some very attractive older people for both Troll and Troll 2.
They did. They're you know, good-looking people. They, you know, the Italians know what they like, and they it's do. Good looks.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember the great score that we got to hear in Troll 1?
Beautiful. Very well calculated. It was balanced, ups and downs.
Well, take the opening from Troll 1. Keep only the font and typeface. And then add this.
Great movies have been made by foreign directors, like Stanley Kubrick or Sergio Leone. Now comes a film from Robert Drake.
Who got a motherfucking synth machine for Christmas?
Casio.
It does. It sounds like the automatic, the preloaded song on the Casio keyboard that you play.
Is this from Cyborg?
I wish.
Cyborg the Quickening. So
no, it sounds like this could be Miami Vice.
Yeah,
like this is, oh, it's Troll 2, the Miami Vice streets,
skateboarding down a street thinking that you're cool
with goblins, orcs, and also Tubbs.
Hey, this is special guest, another orc.
It sounds like the Street Fighter 2 select screen. Like, you're fighting.
Or this is like the kind of music they play where the actors just turn around and it's like featuring, and then it's a name you'll never remember, like featuring Sarah O'Donnell McFesterson.
Yeah, that's horrible. Oh, gosh.
I must say this whole film is a big send up to the Dario Argento with the band, the Goblins. It's like, do you believe in goblins? Hell yeah. Did it.
Did it. Grandpa Seth is laying out the story of Peter as he's chased through the woods. He's met by a pretty girl with the fakest freckles I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, clearly, freckles that were like, we need to add the freckles now. Add the freckles on her face right now.
You know what it looked exactly like when girls paint their faces to look like deer?
Yeah. It looks like a Snapchat filter.
Yes.
Very identical.
Without the nose and the ears or the big eyes.
He lays out that goblins eat half man, half plants only, and that is their favorite food. And we find out that Grandpa Seth has actually been dead for 6 months.
What?
Yeah, you learn that Grandpa Seth, he's not even alive. He just talks to young Joshua through telepathy or from beyond the grave.
Another film that precursors The Sixth Sense? So.
Yeah, this is before The Sixth Sense. Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan actually stole all of his ideas from Troll 2.
Good job nailing Shyamalan.
Next, you get to see the weirdest workout in a bedroom that you're ever going to see, as her Joshua's sister is working out in very 80s spandex. It has a bench press in her room.
And she's got like a leather belt thing on, like low back support.
Wait, I think you pronounced it wrong. It's Shyamalan.
Shyamalan.
I love you, Justin Schlegel.
When you saw her hip bones, weren't you like, stop working out, you're going to disappear.
Stop it. And her boyfriend crawls up into her room where we get to hear this. This is just some of the, give you an idea of some of the dialogue that goes on in the movie. Do yourself a favor. If you haven't seen Troll 2, see this movie. We're not going to spoil it for you for this, but this is just a tidbit of some of the Italian written English.
Written by Italians? Really?
It makes so much sense.
Italians that, you know, will really connect with U.S. audiences.
Elliot, what kind of idiotic joke is this? You scared the shit out of me.
I'm the victim of a nocturnal rapture. I have to release my lowest instincts with a woman.
Oh. Release your instincts in the bathroom.
Are you nuts? You trying to turn me into a homo?
Wouldn't it be too hard? If my father discovers you here, he'd cut off your little nuts and eat them. He can't stand you.
Cut off your little nuts and eat them. You know, there's so many magical moments. That's just one of them. This, the acting, everything. So we get to meet Holly and her boyfriend Elliot up in the bedroom.
She literally became better at acting as they continued filming.
Yeah, yeah. Is she like, oh, this is how you do it? Okay, I got this.
Oh, wait a second. I just found out something on IMDb.
Okay.
This movie is now rated 2.8 stars.
Oh.
As opposed to what it originally had, 0.0.
See, this is the bullshit that that happens, because people take something really bad and they'll like it ironically, and then they'll score it higher because they're like, oh, well, so many people like it. Like, no, it's ironic. This is dumb.
No, I see, like, I think there's something to be said about a movie this bad where, yeah, it's a bad movie. Don't get me wrong, but... is it really, like, define bad? I mean, bad is something that, if it was really bad, I wouldn't watch it, right?
Okay.
Like, if it was really horrible, I wouldn't watch it again and again and get so much enjoyment out of it.
Let's define bad. Script not written by English speakers. Actors not allowed
intrigued.
To leave the English that is written for them. The actors not intending to act. They wanted to stand in the background and not do shit. There is a character in this movie, not to give too much away, but jeepers creepers, you couldn't be more of a cliche bullshit artist as this lady.
Yes.
In her fucking church house.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, goddamn. And then there is literally a scene where they're about to be attacked, which is just people standing around looking at them, and they go, quick, get in the house.
Yes.
Like, dude,
I mean,
I can't
listen but to do it that bad, like, you couldn't. There's moments where you catch, like, great pieces of realness. And then there's sometimes you capture stuff like that can never be recreated.
Here's a good example. Like, I heard they're trying to remake and re-release, like, they're going to redo Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay.
And it's going to be terrible because everybody already sees it as a terrible movie. They're going to go out of their way.
Is it a terrible movie?
It as a bad movie.
Really?
And it's going to be too self-aware.
I don't know. I think I really liked Big Trouble in
Little
China.
Do you know how, like,
is it a
sexist and racist and terrible Kurt Russell is the whole time? It's hilarious. But it's such a bad movie.
I mean, I wouldn't say it. Bad
it's entertaining. It's hilarious.
I mean, a bad movie is, like, fucking, to me... like a bad movie is Transformers 2, right?
Sure.
Or Transformers 3.
Sure.
Like, you blew your budget on these special effects. I have no connection to the movie.
But let's put it this way.
I have a connection to these horrible films.
Okay, but let's put it this way, right? Let's compare. Just what is your brain's response, right? Dances with Wolves. Big Trouble in Little China, right?
Mm-hmm.
How about Gladiator?
Yeah.
Big Trouble in Little China.
I'm choosing Big Trouble in Little China every time so far. Those
see, but
first
this is
two.
Like asking me about what it's like to be a girl. You're just not the right
maybe
one to
I'm
ask.
Maybe I'm not. Maybe not.
Know?
Maybe we're just fire and ice. Maybe. What can I say?
It's definitely John Carpenter's top 10 of movies. What was the Dracula one that he made? That was pretty bad.
Oh, I like Dracula 2000.
or what was the one on Mars?
Oh, John Carpenter's Vampires?
What was the one with Ice-T on Mars?
Oh,
or
yeah,
something?
The Ghost of Mars.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
I rewatched that recently, and I hated it. I remember watching it, and then I had a new appreciation for this.
I can think of at least 4 or 5 films that are unwatchable that don't deserve any rating.
Mm.
But then I can think of really bad movies that made me laugh so bad I love them. Like, say, for instance, 1990's Ghost House, which is another Italian film, or The Legend of Boggy Creek, one of my favorite bad films of all time, with the worst Falk, Arkansas accent, and also editing that just kind of wandered and wanted to scream at the film, like, what are you doing? Where are you going with this film? Why?
I will adamantly admit, Big Trouble in Little China, hands down, 10 times better than Mutant Hunt or Mutant Hunter.
Yeah.
Or anything on Sci-Fi Channel.
Now, yeah. See, Mutant Hunt is almost unwatchable. I'll admit that. Because Mutant Hunt just isn't quite bad enough. Like, if it was just a little bit worse, it would be good. But it's just...
But then, like, when I think bad movies that are, like, purposefully bad, I think trauma movies.
Yeah, yes. Trauma is bad to be bad. But this, I mean, if you again, if you ever watch the documentary on Troll 2, it's very much worth watching. But when you hear Claudio talk about this movie, he doubles down and blames everyone else for not getting his movie. He doesn't stop. There was actually a as recently, I want to say like 2013 or 2014, there was a convention for Troll 2 that Claudio was not invited to. This was the original cast that are all doing it and shitting on the movie, like, oh yeah, this movie's horrible. Claudio showed up to this event and started heckling them and saying, they were like, these people are all shit. They did not do my vision correctly. This is fucking bullshit.
Sour
and then
grapes.
He got removed from the Q&A and put into a hallway where he continued to rant and rave for the next like hour and a half, shitting on everyone.
Wow.
Oh, so good. So
how
fucking
about this?
Good.
Quality time challenge. Put your dick where your nuts are. Fucking let's cover Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, I'd love to.
See,
yeah.
Now you have to survive the trip. You have to come back and do
I
that.
I will. We will do Big Trouble in Little China.
Hell yeah.
You know, well, what we're supposed to do is Joe Robinson and Rocky IV after in February.
Ooh, okay.
So maybe we'll do that and we'll do a dub episode. We'll do Big Trouble and
fuck
Rocky
yeah.
IV.
Do we know any Asians that we could have as a guest on the show? The only Asian comedian that we know in all of Baltimore.
Hak Jin Kim, is that here?
Oh, there's another?
What other Asian?
Dan Ninen?
Come on. It's Dan Ninen. No.
He's half Japanese.
I can't think of his... You know the only Asian comedian in all of Baltimore. He actually dressed up as the kid from Up.
Oh, you're talking about CJ Stoddard, who hasn't done
Stoddard. Oh god,
who
yes.
hasn't done comedy in like 4 or 5 years.
But to
yes,
me,
he'll be great.
He's still the only Asian comedian.
Jeremy's all of Jeremy has local comedy references from the years 2010 to 2013.
I haven't even seen anybody
there isn't
in
any.
Like 2 years.
I don't think CJ's done comedy in that long. Anyway, welcome to a big part of the show that just got cut out. So. It ends with Holly asking her boyfriend to come on the trip and it'll be great. We can finally be together, which is just, you
We're
know, I might play a little bit more of this scene just so you can hear how awkward this fucking dialogue
and
is.
And you?
I like you. But my family doesn't like you. They say you're good for nothing and that you spend way too much time with your friends.
Oh, but I swear I never see them.
And the friends are in the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see?
What's wrong with having friends?
Nothing. If you want to remain a virgin for life, you take them to bed with you, too. And I don't believe in group sex.
Is it true that your family's going on vacation tomorrow?
Yes.
I'll come with you?
Okay, I'll tell my father that you're coming with us
Rude.
Tomorrow.
Where are we going?
Nilbog, a wonderful half-empty town. It's an exchange. A family from the country is coming to live here. And we're going to live in their house. Oh, Elliot, it will be wonderful. You and me in the woods. This time, we'll be able to be together for sure.
And my boys?
If you bring them with you, I never want to see you again.
Okay.
So she's going to go tell her dad, and in the morning, Elliot's not there, and she's stuck in the car all by herself.
Heartbroken.
It immediately starts a fight between Joshua and Holly, where mom says, "Kids, quiet down. Elliot, Joshua, sing your favorite song."
This is creepy to me.
Which is row,
no.
row, row your
No,
head
no, no. Don't mess this up.
Okay.
Honey, can you sing that song I like so much? That song? Yeah, but we won't mention what the name of it is. Okay, row, row,
row, row.
That's that song I like so much.
And could you
imagine him writing it where he's just like, you know, the one thing that Americans love that row, row, row your boat song.
I'm
they
surprised they weren't
it.
Like, I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. And they start clapping and eating circus peanuts and shooting guns out the window.
Okay, let me do this justice. Joshua, start singing. Come on, sing that song I like so much. I don't feel like singing, Mom. Just sing. Row, row, row your boat.
Could you any harder deny your children's emotional need for validation? Your daughter is over here trying to get her puss wet, okay? She's heartbroken by this dude. Your son has been having nightmares and talking to his dead grandfather. And she's like, how about we all shut the fuck up and sing family songs right now? Okay, how about we all just shut the fuck up with our feelings?
It also is revealed that Elliot is following with his three best friends in a Class C motorhome because, you know, you let 16-year-olds fucking take the old RV out to follow their, you know, 15-year-old girlfriend to a town that nobody's ever heard of with other other young boys in the hopes of finding hot young snatch running around the streets of
what do they
Nilbog.
Keep calling it? They're like, what about all the liberated chicks. Young women?
Yes, liberated young women of Nilbog.
I like how she said it's a wonderful half-empty town. Like, you just contradicted yourself.
It's a wonderful and half-empty. So,
Shakers live there.
Josh asks his parents to pull over on the side of the road because he sees a weird man holding up a sign, and sure enough, it's Grandpa. He talks to Grandpa Seth on the side of the road and tells him to turn back there. It's dangerous.
Don't go.
And then he looks back, and it's really just a regular old bum jerking off.
Oh, man.
It's horrible. So they pull back up in the van, and it's at this point I noticed that the van has luggage strapped to the top of the the roof rack.
Sure.
And there's only two people in the back seat of this fucking like van that holds like nine people. I'm very familiar with this vehicle. It's actually a 1990s Ford Aerostar, uh-huh. Extended cab edition, which was my first vehicle I ever owned. It comfortably seats six in the back.
Yeah.
And there's also a trunk area where you could easily fit all this. There's no reason that you put that shit on the top of the roof there.
They were excited. They want everybody to know they're going on vacation.
It's so retarded. There's no need for that. Anyway.
I love the Aerostar. I got the hand-me-down tan, and Eric got a red one.
So. Oh. Yeah. I called it the Big Red Machine, and that's where I did all my high school fucking.
Nice.
And smoking of mad doobies in the back of that.
Hell yeah.
I slept in that van many a night in Ocean City because I just put a mattress back there and took all the seats out and lived in a van down by the river. Bayside.
Down by Ace Hardware.
Yeah. I worked at Ace Hardware and just park it out back and then sleep in the van. And then they'd see me waking up for work and they were like, were you just sleeping in your van out there? And I'd go, not right now, Gary. I'm not even clocked in yet. Can you just calm the fuck down real quick?
Gary, you give me that fucking attitude, Gary.
So... Holly sees the boys pulled over on the side of the road, gives them the finger. They pretend to see it, even though the glass is clearly way too tinted as they drive by. There's
no way
you can see that at all. They then head into Nilgob. Nilbog. Ugh, it's so confusing and I'm so dyslexic. Dad is very concerned with pretending this is a farmer's life. Like, make sure they know that we're farmers. I'm like, you're doing an exchange with a family that's going to go to your house and understand that they're going to know you're not a farmer, like, right away, right?
You're wearing an Eddie Bauer button-down and cargo shorts. Yes. I think they're going to figure you out.
And they're talking to the family as they're rolling out, and he's like, oh, I think you really like our place. It has all the modern conveniences, like... refrigerator, microwave,
toaster.
Literally, they walk in seconds later, all of that stuff's in the house. You understand? Yeah. Like, it's
so insulting.
It's just, what a piece of shit you are.
If the lights scare you, don't worry. They'll go out when you turn them off.
We're goblins, sir, not fucking monsters. Okay.
We oppress women, but we're not retarded. Okay.
The little boy in the other family does throw a ball over to Joshua that reads, "Eat before we eat you."
Whoa.
As they enter, they find a fully prepared meal on the table. Grandpa tells Billy, "Don't let them eat that. Otherwise, they'll end up like Peter from the story." Grandpa freezes time for little Joshua, and Joshua just takes his merry little time.
Yes, he does.
Looking at everybody about to dig into this food on the table that oddly has weird green shit all over it, but everybody's just like, oh, this is strangely appetizing.
Oh, cool.
And time is frozen. He can't think of what to do. I can only think. So he pulls down his pants and decides to piss on all the food so they can't eat it.
Rock and roll, baby.
Then brings us to the one of my... This is... my second favorite part of the movie right here is this line spouted off by the dad as he's taking young Joshua up to his room. He actually got the part in this movie. He was a dentist before this. He got the part in this film by reading this line at the audition.
Hospitality. Do you know what it means? And you can't piss on hospitality. I won't allow it.
What are you going to do to me, Daddy?
Tighten my belt by one loop so I don't feel hunger pains. And your sister and mother will have to do likewise. Okay, Joshua, you want to get rough with me? You want to show me that you don't like the choice of this house for our vacation by going on a hunger strike? Well, I'll accept the challenge. But just remember, when I was your age, I really did suffer from hunger. We'll see who gets through this. But just remember, I've got more practice than you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Whoa, Dad. What happened in your life, bro?
Hunger pains.
You okay?
You can't piss on hospitality.
I will not allow it. I didn't notice how strangely Southern their dad is.
Yeah, you know, it's that Utah accent. Uh-huh. He's very Mormon. He was tightening his second pair of magical underwear. By the way,
does that work? Just make your clothes tighter and you don't feel hungry? I don't think that's how that works. I think you have to, like, eat food.
I think those are actually weight loss goals you're accomplishing right there, Dad. Billy's rushed upstairs. We just did that. Meanwhile, the boys are parked in a camper in the middle of the woods, wondering where all the hot single girls are. Maybe not in a middle of the fucking woods is what I said. Arnold finds some random girl just running in the woods, and he decides, "Huh, I better go chase this girl in distress down."
Yeah, it's
in a very rapey, creepy way.
Clothes ripped, blood on her outfit, screaming, crying, tripping. He's like, "Ma'am, can you wait a second?"
Nice.
Yeah.
He immediately goes, "I came here for the chicks. I gotta check this out."
How'd you guys meet? Well, I was running away from my attacker, and he saw me and. When you know he wouldn't let me go either, men. Am I right?
He ends up tracking her down and tripping her, and she's relieved to find out that, oh, you're not a monster.
Oh,
oh my God. I actually only have nearsightedness. Thank you so much for not being a horrible monster. He sees a half dozen of those little midget goblins are now approaching. He decides, it's okay, Toots. Let me handle this. I'm at a level with them. And decides to say, hey, you better leave this girl alone. We're going to go about our own ways. And they respond the only way you can to this pussy. Fucking throw a spear right at his fucking shoulder blade.
Yeah, they were like, okay, guy. Yeah, oh, okay. We have fucking spears.
Hey, take this. We got spears.
He was super confident, too. He was like, I think would he give the thumbs up to her while he was still standing around them? He was like, why don't you guys fuck off? I'm doing great.
I'm doing really good right now. So they then make their way to a church up the hill. They enter the church, and it is it's a very odd scene. You get to meet the witch who is. I don't have any audio queued up for her, but she is, acting chops for days. Let me tell you, acting chops for days. She tells him that her name is Credence, I believe.
Credence, she had this whole Credence. Luna. Credence. Something, something, something good weather. From the ancient family of like Mudalvia. Jesus. And if anybody needs a dentist, it was that bitch.
It's Credence Leonor Giru.
Ugh, whatever.
Deborah Reed.
Whose ancestors came from Stonehenge. They ask for a hospital. She responds, we're used to curing ourselves around here. So,
oh, wait a second. She has a very famous actor's name, Credence Leonor Gielgud.
Mm.
Gielgud.
Yes, just like Sir John Gielgud, a real actor.
So she fixes up a weird vape drink for both of them. They take one sip, and the girl immediately starts to do the rest of her transformation, and she starts bleeding green all out of her pores,
a lot of screaming
out from her everything, and slowly melts into the floor where the goblins come out and start eating her alive.
And this takes 7 minutes.
Yeah, this transformation as she slowly melts does take a inordinately long time.
And then what does he say? He's like, why can't I move? Oh, what's happening to her? They're eating her. Well, and they're going to eat me.
Drops this.
They're eating her. And then they're going to eat me. Oh, my God.
Zoom in.
That's hilarious.
Magical. Just magical, people.
I hate to say that Deborah Reed carries the whole movie for me. So
she does. Is yes. That's what does it for you?
Not only her her screaming, just her really bad, like a venereal disease around her mouth.
Yeah.
Oh, she made the cover of that the Best of Bad Acting video.
Yeah. I mean, she deserves it.
She does.
She deserves
it. Nailed
it.
I hate to say she is one of the better actors of the film, though.
True. She really gives her all.
So, meanwhile, back at the house, Holly is working on her sweet dance moves in the mirror.
Yeah.
This is just a very bizarre dance scene where she's just like, yeah, I'm dancing in my room.
I'm the shit and I'm 15.
I learned through my research, I learned that she actually, that was an ad-lib scene by her. Okay. Because she actually had cheerleading experience, so those were all of her cheerleading moves. She was busting out right there.
One of the cheerleader moves is making the glasses move. So.
Mm-hmm. In Utah, it doesn't take much to fill a resume. Am I right?
Nope, not at all.
Is this really a Utah film?
Yeah, it's filmed in Utah.
Oh, it's got filmed in Utah. It's got Italian Mormon cross links like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, fucking yeah. Grandpa Seth then comes all of a sudden appears in the mirror asking for Joshua because you're a fucking specter, but you can't realize that you're just blind. You can't tell that Joshua, oh God, it's a girl.
Sorry, wrong room.
Of course, the family comes to check it out and they can't see anything, but Josh says, don't worry, Holly, I'll swap rooms with you. And then gets to have his little chat with Grandpa Seth, who tells him to leave still, and they're still not leaving. So anyway, on with the movie. they wake up and there's still no food, and they're very perplexed by this. They're like, all we have is this milk, but it looks like it's spoiled in here. I'm like, first of all, when you talked about hunger pains earlier, did you not plan on eating at all? Or were you expected there to be a dinner set out when you came to this house
already?
Hey,
I'm going to live in your house. Do you mind fucking filling the fridge, you piece of shit?
And then you spent the night there. You did nothing to fix it. And then we're surprised when you woke up in the morning.
Do you mean there's no food here when I didn't get any food?
This is the typical episode of Wipe Swap where you wipe swap with goblins, but none of the food is compatible because it's goblin food. Mm-hmm. So... but still hot sex between the wives and everything. So.
We're also following another sub-story on this day where one of the other boys is leaving the camper and heading into town. And they also brought no food, so they need to go get food from the store. And he's jogging down, and a friendly sheriff comes and picks him up, gives him a nice green sandwich. They're like, oh, here, have one of these, little pal. And he's like, huh. Pretty good, mister. Thanks.
It's literally like a potato, like potato bread hamburger roll with green icing, like pancaked in the middle. And he's like, huh, thank you. Cool. Thank you. I'll eat this mystery food.
This looks good. Oh, is this green icing? Wow, this is a great green icing sandwich that you made.
Are you diabetic? Is this just like a quick fix?
You actually confiscated this from some drug lords.
Yeah.
So the sheriff drives him into town, and right when they drop him off, he goes, hey, where are all the hot chicks at? He goes, hot girls. Just basically shits on him and laughs hysterically. And drops him off in front of the store with the biggest sausage fest you've ever seen. Of just fucking, there's like 8 stags sitting out front. Like all of them look like Marlboro Men truck stop motherfuckers that are definitely sucking each other off.
I will give him an award for being a better police officer than Brian Dennehy in First Blood. Much more hospitable.
Well, anybody's more hospitable than Brian Dennehy. Yeah. Come on now.
Nobody's sexier.
He walks into the store, and this is by far my favorite scene of the movie.
This actor. Fucking amazing.
This guy is, as I was doing research for this, found out that this particular actor was... so out of his mind, had just got released from the psycho tank that week.
Oh, really?
And got this part because the other actor didn't show up that day. He was just supposed to be an extra. So he filled in for this part and gave this little ominous speech.
He looks kind of like a goblin.
First of all, he looks like a fucking psychopath, like somebody that belongs in the psycho tank. But here, give this a listen of the store shop owner scene from from Troll 2.
Can I help you?
Coffee.
There's no coffee here in Ilbog. It's the devil's drink.
Eggs.
Bacon? Are you crazy, boy? We're vegetarians here in Nilbog. Didn't you know that? Here's some Nilbog milk. Special milk. High in vitamin A. Here is free.
Free?
Of course it's free. We love tourists here in Nilbog. Try some, boy.
Do you?
And have some of your friends drink some also.
Okay.
That was real nice, mister. Thanks.
Okay. Do you feel all right?
Are you guys coming? Are you guys coming to the rape fest?
Yeah. Meanwhile, the stag party out front. One of the stags comes up to him and says, "Hey, better go, saw your buddy at that church. Better go up the hill and go check it out."
Yeah, I like how he goes. Your friend has a message for you. What? What friend? Arnold? Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah,
anyway.
That guy. Whatever. So they're all vegetarians here that we've gathered. Apparently, the goblins. We'll eat half human, half half vegetable.
That's
people.
Like when somebody says I'm a vegetarian, but I eat pizza with meat on it. Like, you can't be cannibalistic and a vegetarian.
I like it because this movie was written actually by Claudio's wife, who thought of the script for this movie because all of her friends had turned into vegetarians recently, and so she thought it was some weird cult, and this is how the movie came about. So I like how much they shit on vegetarians, but it's true. It's like I like how they're just like, oh, we like meat so much. I got to turn these people into fucking plants so I can eat them and then actually have a good meal. I like her just twisted view on reality. Like, this is what it must really be like to be a vegetarian.
Vegetarian,
I mean, this is horrible.
Mormon, come see, come saw.
Next, we get to see another famous scene from the movie. You understand what I say when I mean famous, right? As in famous. So next we see little Joshua, and he is looking in the rearview mirror of his dad's Aerostar van when he sees Grandpa Seth.
Grandpa Seth, are you there?
Goblin.
Oh, Bog, it's Goblin spelled backwards.
You know, a lot of people
compare
this scene to that scene in The Shining where Shelley Duvall sees that red rum is actually spelled murder backwards.
Yes, it's very similar. That's what I thought.
And people usually say the same thing. The Shining, that was an amazing film. This film sucks.
Yes. So Nilbog is goblin spelled backwards. Big revelation of the film right there. Were you even ready for that? I know I wasn't, because it didn't blow my mind at all.
I remember this was my reaction. I looked up from playing solitaire on my phone and went,
I actually had to write goblin out. I'm like, it does spell it backwards. I can't believe it.
Oh my God. It's holy shit.
This kid had this like chronic stress the entire movie.
Yeah, he's very stressed out.
Yeah, every line he's like, but I
Yeah, he's literally Tweak from South Park.
Yeah,
this whole movie.
Yeah, straight up. Yeah.
So finally we get to see the boy who just picked up the milk find his way up to the church. He finds out quickly it is he's walking around sweating a little bit of green blood from his forehead because that's what the food does to you. Is it's
puberty.
Slowly turning you into a plant.
You know what would help that out? If he had like a big sore, they could just pour a lot of maggots into it.
Yeah.
So.
And I love it because this is years before the movie Anchorman, so it's really a trendsetter. But, you know, when you're hot and sweaty and about to collapse, like, oh, milk. I really could use a big glass of milk right now.
He spit it out.
Instantly drinks it. Oh, this is a terrible choice.
Milk is a bad choice.
This is so horrible.
That's the best.
When you lose your powers of spelling bee powers and you're not giving milky white sweat anymore, so...
There's a lot of stuff that's only going on at the same time, so I'll try to go through this as quickly and as painlessly as possible. Credence goes, the witch Credence goes and welcomes the rest of the family with a very shitty cake that she's made that she calls a pudding, which is also weird. It says welcome on it, and it clearly looks like it was bought at the local store. She then mentions that her daughter looks very appetizing, and the mom goes, well, that's weird that you'd say it like that.
So she makes it better by saying, oh, I'm sorry, I meant your daughter was provocative.
Oh, yes.
Because that's appropriate.
Let me call your daughter a whore, if that's okay. Do you mind? In the meantime, Josh is going to search out where this little secret sermon is, and as he's looking down at the sermon of them basically shitting on all meat products, they're like, and they eat meat! And bologna and bacon.
I thought of you when I was watching this, because I was like, if we refilmed it, it would have been the same thing of them being like, devils eating sausage, and hot dogs, and they would have kept doing it till it got to Eric in the back where he's pretending like, oh man, just sausages, that's yuck. And, boy, no, jeez.
And caffeinated products like Coca-Cola. Yeah. The prophet Joseph Smith does not approve.
And Wendy's homestyle chicken to-go wraps.
Why, God? Why?
Under $2 is your local Wendy's.
Joshua is found out because he accidentally knocks a skateboard off and is captured. Holly goes to find Elliot at the camper and then gives him a choice between basically staying there with his really queer friends, because they both come out of like the trailer and they're buttoning up their shirt like, oh, hey, Holly, what's up? Like, we're not having a little stag party in here or whatever. Hey, it's cool to see you. Hey, it's either me or your faggoty friends. What's the deal? And he chooses his girl and hops in the car.
Idiot.
Has a really awkward exchange with her dad, which is just like, you won't even go and hang out with my daughter. I don't even want to see you over here unless you're coming with us right now.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
This is your last chance to fuck her.
Yes.
Get in the van.
Was there a moment during watching this where you kind of wish the Aerostar had slid into the RV as he just barely goes on that rock slide? So,
yeah. I think so.
When he backed up before he came down the hill, you saw that sucker slide like 10 feet.
Oh, yeah,
10
yeah,
feet,
yeah.
Motherfucker. So,
that was pretty wild.
You
know the Aerostar. I was just watching those Aerostar scenes.
I know the Aerostar in and out.
Are you
Aerostar?
Saying, do I wish more people in this movie died? Yes.
I just wish there was 100 more movies with Aerostars in it. So,
Dad rescues little Josh right before he's about to get force-fed some ice cream at the deadly sermon there. They have an awkward exchange and then go about their business.
Can I give that famous line?
Yes, please.
The line when the head priest, when it zooms up right on his face. We need some time for some things to happen.
Ooh, plot movement.
Thank you, writer, wife of Marcio de Fluckablugablogablog.
Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, Mr. Drake. Sorry.
Meanwhile, we find the other friend, Arnold, who's been turned 30% tree. I made that very distinction. And he was 30% tree at this point.
I'll take that.
Did his mouth look kind of like an anus, though?
It looks kind of like a butthole, a little bit.
Kind of like the preacher show.
He's falling out, though. His other buddy comes in, but he's not doing so hot. He starts dragging him out towards the door, trying to get young Arnold out, and he collapses. And Credence knocks the other boy out. She decides to punish Arnold for this act of treason by cutting him with a chainsaw. She says, you'll feel a little tickle as this happens. And then she starts chopping with the chainsaw, and he starts going, ha 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 ha.
That guy, the friend that got captured first, every response he had was super anticlimactic.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, what's happening to her? And why can't I move or do anything about it? And then cut to him getting cut with a chainsaw, and he's giggling like, man, you are a constant disappointment.
And then he's like, oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark. Oh, good to see you. You know, this tree is my future wife. Dad, Elliot.
Credence, you're tearing me apart!
Dad, Elliot, and the rest of the fam then return to find that there's a giant party at their house. There's so much food. Josh warns them not to eat it. He goes up to his room, and Grandpa, Seth, and Josh plan a little secret. they're going to throw a Molotov cocktail at the house.
Hell
make
yeah.
this a Molotov cocktail party.
Anarchy.
But before he can light it, the old sermon preacher comes out and grabs it from him. And Grandpa Seth uses his powers of telepathy or the force or I don't know, but makes
sweater power.
Makes the whole street turn black and just makes
static
a lightning bolt appear.
Makes
a shitty lightning bolt appear. It lights him on fire in front of everyone. And
pretty
that
cool.
Sermon that sermon wielding goblin bursts into flames.
Let me just walk on this carpet a little bit more to get some more powers.
You wait, buddy. You wait. When I get across this room in these socks, ooh, you wait.
Hiyuchin!
Sorry.
That was a cooler part effect of the movie. And no, again, anytime I see a person on fire in a movie, not in real life, I love it. I'm into it.
The kids run back into the house, and Dad and Elliot and the fam are in the giant. I'm looking at the giant party. There's so much food. Josh warns them not to eat. All of a sudden, a giant goblin jumps out of the mirror. And Grandpa, I guess this is a little bit before, but I thought it was important to add to the movie. It's not, but he cuts off this goblin's hand, and then you also see that it cuts off Credence's hand back at the church. So the witch is directly
linked.
But
she starts screaming?
Yeah.
This is the one and only note I have on Trolls 2. When mm-hmm. her hand gets cut off, uh-huh. and it looks wicked cool, there's like blood coming out of the stump, and she just keeps... It cuts to her like three or four times going, and she's got this Stonehenge situation where there's like space between two large stones in her house, and there's light and vapor coming out, steam mm-hmm. or whatever. And she sticks her amputated arm in there, and I said magic spells and Stonehenge rituals is as close to free healthcare as we're gonna get.
Happy happy Halloween silver shamrock.
Now after this is the part that we just went over where Grandpa Seth then lights that guy on fire, and then the whole town watches their buddy burn.
Oh,
and
I'm dying.
This is probably, I don't know why I found this part so fucking funny. The whole family is huddled together and realizes, like, hey, that was our friend. And they all just start literally try to get out of the situation by Homer Simpson walking back through like the thing. Like it's like a 30-second shot of them just walking backwards slowly, like,
well,
nothing to see here, I guess. Guess we're just gonna go back inside. Nobody's gonna move, right? Nope, nobody is gonna move. Let's keep moving on back and back. And back, and then it switches back to Eunice, or I'm sorry, not Eunice.
Credence.
I'm getting back. Credence.
The Credence.
Credence is now rejuvenating her hand within the Stonehenge wall.
Oh, and thank God.
Then asks for her full power, which makes her not look like a Marilyn Manson groupie. So she takes off her makeup.
And heals her herpes around her lips.
Yes. Yes. So no herpes lips, and she's all better now. The gang outside gives him an ultimatum. They say, here, throws up a big bag of sandwiches and say, you eat these or you die painfully. All right,
okay.
sweet ultimatum, guys. The sister then suggests that maybe we should hold a seance for Grandpa, which sounds like the stupidest idea in the whole world to get him to try to come back. And Josh goes, what a great idea.
You're
we should
a genius.
Immediately do that. It switches back to the trailer where the last kid is there all by himself, where he's watching something really weird on TV. I don't know what it is, but they flash it for a second and it looks like the Star Wars holiday special. I shit you not. It's fucking really weird. It's like a bunch of weird things on the screen. And then sure as shit, there is the fucking witch, and she's fucking hot and sexy.
Of
and
all
holding...
parts in the movie, this I could not.
This is the... This is
I
the
could
most
not.
Bizarre part of the movie. Honestly, of everything that's happened, this is the most bizarre thing that happens. She brings out a corn cob and she's playing with it and
just
kind of being
around.
Real sexy with it a
oh,
little bit.
Shit.
She says, come outside. And sure as shit, she's right there.
What?
And then she's like, do you want to fuck me? Well, yes, I do.
Yeah.
So he takes her inside and then they start getting a little intimate, but there's no kissing. There's some light petting. And then she takes out the corn cob, and I'm like, okay, not really sure where
we're
going
with
this.
That's pretty far into the relationship.
Bro,
so.
That's going into
well,
you.
This is I guess this is what sex is, right? And then they start making out with the corn cob in between their mouths and eating the corn at the same time. And it is, he's like, you like corn, don't you? And he's like, I love popcorn. Well, we just have to heat it up. And then all of a sudden, popcorn just starts flying around the room. And by the way, we'll just get this whole scene out of the way. She fucks this kid in a room full of popcorn for the next like 10 minutes of the movie as it goes back, and it just gets more and more filled with popcorn. He's like, oh, there's a lot of popcorn. The end scene is him, and he's not dead. He's just covered in popcorn, and only his head is left in the thing. You're like, I can't have any more popcorn. That was it. So this kid's first sexual experience, you realize he set a sexual fetish so far, so high, that he can never, ever recreate this, right? Like, how's he ever going to fuck and have his mind blown like he did with Sweet Creedence?
I naively thought, this is gonna make sense. This is going to be something with food and this kid. Maybe she's going to turn him into something for her side, and then he's gonna help her by pretending to be his friend's friend still, and then get in with them, and then it's gonna get her into the house. Like, nope, it was just she asked to be at the height of her power and then took a hard side road to go fuck an underage kid in popcorn. And then, you know what, back to the movie. Sorry, we took a side road for a second. Just wanted to get that out of our system. Back to the film.
You know what this is? We need a good sex scene with a boy who has sex with a hot girl. Why are we doing this? It's like, the American kids, they need this. This is what it. American kids like.
Yeah.
You know, you help sell concessions for the film? How about a popcorn sex scene? Then that's when they go out and buy more popcorn and be good for the thing. It's great for the movie. It's great. You write it in.
So, the seance is going great because apparently Josh is the world's greatest medium all of a sudden. Grandpa says they have 10 minutes to destroy the stone. That's all the power he has. And we have to go and destroy the Stonehenge stone. It's the source of the goblin power.
Now, if only there wasn't like a digital ticker on screen during these tick, wonderful moments tick, like Die Hard.
Tick.
So.
Yeah.
They're concentrating, and then the goblin gang shows up, and Dad gets real badass with a bunch of little people on the stairwell. Dad literally throws the same midget goblin down the steps like four times in this next couple of minutes.
It's hard for him to get out of the doorway of the steps because the pillow in his stomach under his tunic gets stuck.
Yes.
Can we say dream job? So, yeah,
it's just kicking midget midgets
thrower.
Down the steps.
Yes. I was paid to toss midgets in a movie.
Josh, through the power of seance, has somehow been transported to the church. All during this time, Credence is still fucking that boy in the camper.
Super weird.
He's up there. He's trying to figure out what to do. Him and Grandpa Seth touch the stone and start destroying it with good, positive thoughts. And he also gives him a special bag that says, hold on to this. Open it when you absolutely need it. And he's like, okay, Grandpa, whatever you say.
And it's all filled with milk duds.
It's just nothing.
And corn
it's
cobs.
It's nothing but a 12-inch double-sided black dildo.
the ultimate fighting device!
Oh, yes!
When you really need it.
So, all of a sudden, the lady starts to lose her power. Sister Credence starts losing her power. She becomes ugly and Marilyn Manson-like again and starts rushing back to the church with all of her goblin friends. They attack Josh because now Grandpa Seth has disappeared because he's run out of the 10 minutes of time that he could help, and which is a very finite spiritual amount of time.
Yeah.
And then Josh is left with no other choice but to use whatever's in the bag, and he pulls it out, and it's a giant bologna sandwich.
Double decker.
No, it is, I swear, when you look,
it's
when
a
I looked
stack.
At it, it's like the whole, it's like a whole pack of bologna. Yeah. And it's not like off-centered or anything. It's just like, just a whole pack of bologna inside of a piece of
this is my favorite line in the movie, her response to that. Can we, is there a way to pull that up?
Yes. Yeah, of course there is. If we have enough, if there's a will, there's a way, Kimberly Ambrose.
Oh, they're gonna feed him the green goop. No.
Going to feed you, Josh. And fast. about the toxins.
It's killing her.
Double deck bologna sandwich.
They put on Giles theme for it.
So eating your way to freedom.
The climax of the movie where you're supposed to feel like, oh, thank God, it's a little boy still chewing a bologna sandwich, putting his hands on a rock, supposedly Stonehenge,
yeah,
and looking back at his captor.
Yep, like, fuck you, bitch.
You're supposed to be like, whew.
And some of the midgets still aren't taking direction to actually putting their hands up in fright, just like, hey, what are we supposed to do here?
Right, you know? Right.
Then all of the goblins are slowly explode. All their eyeballs explode one at a time.
Pretty like, cool. Whew,
whew, whew. There's a big gore fest ending there. And the movie ends with everybody safe and sound back at home. And Joshua hears a noise and goes down to realize that my family's been eaten by goblins.
No! Also, while he's watching his mom get eaten by goblins, they show her tits.
Do they?
Lots of naked tits.
Which I thought was weird. Like, is he not traumatized enough?
Yeah, you know what? We need titties in this scene so the boy will experience real trauma.
His own mother's tits.
Nothing like seeing your naked mother is the only thing that makes you this fucking scarred.
But man, she was great in 6 feet under as the mom, so.
Yeah. And that brings us to an end of the fucking masterpiece.
Troll 2,
everybody.
Wow.
What did we learn today?
Nothing.
We learned
absolutely
that
nothing.
I think it's the most accurate depiction, whether you like it or not, of what it's like to be a vegetarian. I think we can all agree on that. I think that it goes to show you that they talk about there's a concoction. There's the big three things that you need to be a serial killer, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You gotta have like usually mom issues, mm-hmm, right? Real shitty mom. Usually sexually abused,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm.
And usually three, you have an affinity for doing stuff to like small animals, mm-hmm, as a child,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like harming animals. The trifecta for making the worst movies in the world are,
yes,
A, foreign director that definitely doesn't, whose native language is not English, right? Like, that's number one.
Doesn't know a lot
one.
About the country you're writing a movie for either.
Number two, a steadfast, borderline, beyond stubborn reality that you're going to make the movie the way you fucking decided to make this movie. And three, add in tits for no reason.
Yes.
And that's usually your perfect concoction of making one of the worst films in the
whole
world.
I'd like to add a four. You hire people who came on to be extras to be the main players in the film.
Listen, everybody deserves a shot. Everyone, you know, he just thought, you know how you like find one person like this guy deserves a shot. He just did that for everybody that came and showed up that day.
Literally,
you get a starring
person.
Role. You get a starring role. You get a starring role. Everybody gets a starring role.
Do you have film experience? No. Good. You're gonna fit right in.
Neither do we.
Yeah.
All right.
See, this movie was already anti-vegetarian, but then I learned that Hitler was a vegetarian, so that just, you know, kind of wrapped it all up for me. So
that's the worst.
And he was also a sensitive man.
Is that a, isn't that a
yes, an
anal cunt song? I knew it. Hitler was a sensitive man.
Yes. He loved painting.
He really did. Preacher Season 2 is very good.
Mm-hmm.
You guys watch Preacher Season 2?
Preacher's
two?
Great. Preacher's so good.
The whole Adolf Hitler's worst day in hell, the day that he relives. God, it's so good.
Still not as good as Midget Hitler in 31, though. So.
Mm.
That is true.
I can't have enough. I'll pretty much watch anything if it has a midget, but if you like really seriously go, like, let's do all the old documentaries, but redo it with all midgets. So, like... It's Little Miss Lady. Hey, everybody. It's just, you know, like, wow, this is one of his most powerful speeches, but as a little midget, it's like he's all angry and everything. So.
Kimberly, anything exciting going on this week? This is the week of, like, the 17th and all that.
I think this is when I'm doing a comedy competition in Virginia with... It's like Baltimore versus DC versus Virginia. It's
me, John Yeager.
Yeah,
Comedy Wars.
Yeah, it's me, T. Brad, and Maria Sanchez.
Mm.
Sanchez.
Yeah,
is that the one they were talking about on 98 Rock?
I don't know.
No.
No, they were talking about Dirty Sanchez.
That's a completely different.
Super different.
Completely different thing. Jeremy, anything interesting going on with you other than mortuary life? That's about it.
I touch dead people now.
Okay, very good, very good. You can tune in next week. We're going to be going over Cherry 2000, guys, for all you Quality Time listeners out there. So make sure you check that out. Get ready. Get subscribed. Hey, tell a friend about us. And Kimberly, where can people find you?
I'm at Watch Me Doing This on Twitter, at Panic at the Deli on Instagram, and the second Saturday shit show is free upstairs the second Saturday of every month. Come out and see us.
Hell yeah. Check out old Kimberly Ambrose. She's doing things, doing big old things.
Bow, bow, bow.
You can check me out and all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Make sure you hop on Stitcher or iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. We will read it on the show. Thank you all very much to all you Quality Timers. We really do appreciate all of our listeners from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you, everybody. Tune in next week. Wish me like luck over in the Middle East.
Yay!
Hug your friends. Take care of each other. And God bless.
And we're also on Swisher.
You know what to do.
I didn't.